Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
At one point, it was the biggest sports brand in the world, famous for its association with the basketball star Michael Jordan and its Just Do It slogan. But lately, the fortunes of running shoe giant Nike have nosedived following some disastrous decisions it made during the COVID-19 pandemic. Here to tell us how it all went wrong for Nike and how it might be rescued by none other than Kim Kardashian is Adam Maguire of the RTE Business Desk. Now, can we just get this Nike thing out of the way? Because yeah. I say Nike, but you say Nike.
Well, yeah, I would have said Nike.
Yeah.
Growing up saying Nike, but Phil Knight, the co-founder and CEO of Nike, says it's Nike.
Well, listen, we have to go with him, don't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, we'll just, yeah, it's the Greek goddess of victory, although I think that is actually pronounced Nike or something along those lines. But anyway,
yeah,
the man who created it
wants to say Nike, so let's do that for him, right? And it has long been the sports brand, hasn't it?
Yeah, really. Like, it was founded back in the 1960s, actually, initially, and it would have saved all this confusion. It was originally called Blue Ribbon Sports, but then rebranded to Nike a couple of years later.
That was a bar, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah, I don't know if you named it after the bar, but it's been the dominant force in kind of athletics and sportswear probably since the 80s. That was kind of when it started moving away from just being a running brand to focusing on other sports. It also is the decade, and you mentioned Michael Jordan, that they signed a young Michael Jordan that led to the creation of the Air Jordans, a pivotal product, huge bit of marketing by the company. And since then, really, it's you're talking about sportswear, it's Nike, then Adidas, and then kind of all the rest. You know, smaller brands might dominate in very niche sports or in particular countries, but broadly speaking, Nike is the big player globally, and everyone else is playing catch up until now.
So what has gone wrong?
Yeah, so you need to go back about 5 or so years ago to find the kind of source of this problem. So January 2020, John Donoghue, or again, we'll get into pronunciation, probably Donoghue,
you're American.
We'll say Donoghue, becomes the new CEO of Nike. And he didn't have a sports or a fashion background. He had previously been CEO of consultancy firm Bain & Company. Then he moved into tech. He had senior roles in eBay and then cloud computing company ServiceNow. And it was kind of that mix of consultancy, tech expertise. He was seen as the right man to bring the company forward. But of course, he didn't have his feet long under the desk when he was faced with a major shock to the business, which was the COVID-19 pandemic. And the first big impact on that for Nike is that retail around the world shut down. And, you know, at that point, Nike was a retailer itself, but far more importantly were the relationships that it had with other retailers, the likes of sports shops, department stores and so on. They were the places that the vast bulk of Nike products were sold and bought each year. But of course, the pandemic hits and all of that shuts down. Coinciding with that, though, is a spike in demand for sporting goods because, you know, people want to buy runners, they want to buy sportswear, fitness accessories because they're at home and they want to stay fit or get fit or they want to keep themselves busy. And because all the shops are closed, they, of course, go online for that. They go to Nike's website and they start buying their products. It would have obviously sold products online before then, but as I say, physical retail was where it was at up until the pandemic. So they see this dramatic shift basically overnight, pretty much. Huge demand for online sales. And it prompts Donoghue to put his foot down on a strategy that was already in place, which was to move to the DTC model, the direct-to-consumer model. It was actually in place before he took over at Nike, but he decided to accelerate it. The idea there, you know, rather than relying on the middleman of the sports shop, you shift focus, you sell directly to consumers through your website, but also through an expanded physical network of shops, which allows you to have a direct relationship with the consumer. It allows you don't have to fight for shelf space, you know, with other brands. You have the whole shop to yourself. And it also means you get to keep all the money from the sale. You don't have to give a cut to the retailer who's selling the product for you. So,
cutting out the middleman.
Yeah.
So going direct to the consumer, as the strategy says, which I suppose he thought was good news for the company's bottom line.
Yeah,
right?
and the shareholders thought so too. If you look at Nike's share price, there's a brief dip in March 2020. That was at the point when lockdowns kicked in and everyone thought there's going to be a global recession. But a year on from that point, shares were nearly 100% higher on the back of this shift in the model. And if you go to late 2021, they're 160% higher because here you have a major company enjoying a boom in demand. It's taking more money from each product sold. You know, it's win-win. It's kind of a dream come true, at least until the reality then starts to hit. Because Nike's DTC plan wasn't just about selling online. As they say, they wanted to also set up a network, a bigger network of physical shops around the world. That requires a lot of capital investment, a lot of planning. And as any retailer will tell you, it's high risk. Even if you have the Nike brand there, there's no guarantee you're going to be profitable setting up a shop. Being a retailer also creates other headaches because, say, you have a product that doesn't sell very well. In the past, your retail partner takes some or all of the hit on that. They have to discount it. They have to write off the stock.
Mm-hmm.
If you are the retailer, that's your
problem. It's all on you.
100%. So it's a bigger risk in that sense. That kind of stuff is probably fairly manageable for Nike, though. You know, they have money. They have the brand power. They can work through the kinks over time. But it's a different way, though, that the shift to the direct-to-consumer model really starts to hit them and really starts to affect them.
It was something else. What was it?
Well, as I say, Nike's partnerships with retailers used to be central to the business, not just because they kind of outsourced the actual selling of the products, because it was also a big marketing machine for them. You know, they had a lot of shelf space in these places. It meant that, you know, you could offer a wider range of products. When someone walked in, they'd see Nike products everywhere. There'd probably be Nike materials on the website. You'd maybe have the shop assistants who would be encouraging people to buy Nike products or bigging up the brands in some way. And that really matters because, you know, sportswear shops are in places that Nike shops are never going to be. They're much more accessible. They give people the illusion, at least, or the option in terms of looking for different products too. And that's, you know, important. If you're, say, you're starting a new sport and you need runners or shoes, you probably don't know which are the best ones or which are the ones that are going to suit you. So you want to go in and try different brands on, see which ones feel most comfortable. You know, and maybe you want some advice from an expert, from a sales assistant in there. So you go to a sports shop, you try on what they have on offer and you see what's in your price range. It's maybe after that point you go, oh, well, I like the Nike ones. I'm going to stick with them. Mm. And then you'll go to the Nike shop to buy the next pair and to buy the other gear. But that's after you've gone and tried everything else on and, you know, gotten a feel for what suits you best. So you need that sports shop as the first port of call, which then leads you to become a loyal Nike customer. So by scaling back on its relationships with retailers, Nike was giving up that ground. You know, in some cases, they reduced the options of products they were giving to retailers. In some cases, they cut off retailers completely. Like they ended their relationship with Macy's, which meant that a big US retailer didn't have Nike products on their shelves for a while.
I mean, really? I'm sure there was logic to it, but I mean, to not have a presence in a place like Macy's or even the big sports stores where you say, we're not going to give you all of our stuff.
Yeah, we'll give you some of it maybe. So it means suddenly you're taking up half the space you used to take up instead. And, you know, again, the logic was, well, we're Nike. People will just come straight to us to buy stuff. But you're cutting off that flow of
new customers. Hubris, right?
Little bit, yeah, I think so, yeah.
And then
yeah.
Retailers as well left with empty shelves.
Yeah, which this is the core of Nike's problem really, because loads of gaps in stores that would traditionally have had loads of space for Nike products, and retailers don't like empty shelves, you know, so they turn elsewhere to fill them. Some of that would have been taken up by old rivals like Adidas, Puma, Asics and so on. But it also then opened the door for these new brands that were emerging, Hoka being one, On Running being another. Both of them are about 15 years old, set up separately, relatively niche for a long time in kind of running communities. But you got a mixture of social media buzz and then retailers desperate for new products to fill gaps that Nike had left. It leads to an explosion in popularity. Decker owns Hoka. They also own UGG boots, by the way. They said they had the Hoka brand had sales of $571 million in the 3 months to the end of September last year. That's more than seven times the amount it made in the same quarter of 2020. An explosion in demand in 4 years. On Holdings has seen its revenues more than triple since 2021 compared to last year. Profits also tripling as well.
Are they the ones that do the On Clouds?
On Clouds, yeah. That's one of their
brands.
Very
trendy.
Yeah, exactly. And this is it. They just, you know, Nike seeded the battlefield basically to these rivals and allowed them to come in, and, you know, the social media buzz build with them as well. You know, I should say other brands are under pressure as well. Like Adidas is trying to take advantage of Nike's weakness. They want to be the biggest brand in the world, in every country except for the US, and they reckon now is the chance to do that because Nike's so weak. They are also, though, trying to fend off competition from Hoka and from On Running. They're also still recovering from that implosion of a relationship with Kanye West and the Yeezy runners and all that. Just today they said sales will be slower than expected this year, and they're laying off people in their German headquarters as well. So it's not just Nike, but Nike are by far the ones suffering biggest from the shift in sportswear.
And what's Nike doing about this? Like, have they admitted to their mistakes?
Yeah, to an extent it is. Like back in April of last year, the CEO, Donahue, said that maybe they'd move too quickly in shifting away from working with retailers towards the direct-to-consumer model. But he also, at the same time, doubled down that this was the right move. He's saying it's about giving customers what they want, when they want it. In June then of last year, the company announced worse than expected fall in sales, which prompted shares to fall by 20% in one day. That's $28 billion of value wiped off the share price in one day. And as I mentioned, you know, the share price peaked over 2020 and 2021. If you compare them now to the pre-pandemic, it's pretty much flat. So they've given up all those gains that they got in the early stages. Shortly after that massive fall in the share value, Nike's co-founder Phil Knight said the company was standing by Donoghue. He had their unwavering confidence and full support.
Alarm bells.
Yeah, yeah. If you're a politics watcher, you know that means that, you know, the writing is on
you're
the
toast.
Wall there. Yeah, sure enough, he was ousted in September of last year, replaced by Elliot Hill, who was a 32-year veteran at Nike. He started out one of these kind of American dream things, started as an intern, worked his way all the way up, retired in 2020, brought out a retirement to turn the ship around. And that's not just about repairing relationships with retailers, because there's also a feeling the brand isn't innovating. It's not catching up on trends that the smaller, kind of more nimble brands are as well. People feel Nike was even late to react to this resurgence, the popularity of running, which came in the back of the pandemic, which is kind of ironic because Nike started out as a running
shoe
company.
Yeah, that's their meat and potatoes.
Yeah. It's also not has that same cultural relevance. You know, you think of the Just Do It campaign that was huge, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. That game-changing deal with Michael Jordan, there's no equivalent to that nowadays either.
Right. Well, here's Kim Kardashian now riding in on the white charger. So what's she got to do with this?
Yes, I think it's definitely part of their attempt to that. So this is a partnership they announced, Nike and Kim Kardashian's Skims brand, which is a shapewear company. It's going to be a new sub-brand, Nike Skims. Not clear exactly what the products would be, because part of Nike's attempt to turn around is they're saying, we're getting back to sport. We're going to focus on sport again. Shapewear isn't really part of that. So
it's not really.
Yeah, the expectation
pants?
Is,
I don't know.
Is it going to be, you know, a kind of a hybrid shapewear, athletic kind of performance hybrid kind of thing? But of course, a big part of the attraction is Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big, big name, big, big draw. Some might argue that, you know, maybe she's kind of past her peak in terms of promotional powers, you know, star faded a little bit. She still is a big, big draw though, but just maybe not what she would have been maybe 10 years ago. At the same time, that you know, Nike, you know, and others are struggling to find a megastar like Michael Jordan. You know, you that deal was huge for him and for Nike. More recently, they spent a lot of money on Cristiano Ronaldo as one of their stars, but like, you know, he's, you know, an old age pensioner in sporting terms now. You know, like he's not a young star who's coming up. They have lots of deals with soccer players, athletes, basketball players. No kind of big name that, you know, breaks through globally, really outside of the sport that they're in. So I think, you know, Nike is hoping maybe by reaching beyond sports that they can find that big star that they can kind of attach their brand to once again.
And they think it's Kim Kardashian.
They
you
think
say
so.
It may not be. Luke Littler. Because of course, he doesn't have the international maybe appeal in the States as well.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it would be an interesting combination. But no, they do have lots of you know, younger kind of, I think Jude Bellingham is one of their stars as well. But I said, it's none that have that breakthrough. Like Michael Jordan was known outside of basketball. Ronaldo was known outside of soccer, you know, but there's not really that happening with anyone else at the moment. Maybe Luke Littler could be the guy.
Listen, it's a great yarn anyway, Adam. Thanks so much. That's Adam Maguire there on Nike, as we now know how to pronounce it. Coming up next, the parents pushing back against smartphones for first-year students.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.